morning, Professor.
Good morning, Matt.
I just said they're one of Australia's most underutilised resources. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I guess it was built originally to help develop the North against, I guess, possible immigration problems in under the Menzies era. And, yeah, I don't think it's been utilised to the extent that it was originally designed for.
The Centre for Water Research has got this grant. Can you tell us what your team will be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, people probably realise when they go past a lake or an estuary or something like that, when there's green material and the water's a little bit green, usually in the Swan River, for instance, the government puts up signs saying, you know, algal blooms, danger, do not swim, and so forth. That's when the algal bloom is toxic. But the green stuff is actually carbon. I mean, it's like a leaf in a tree. The algae is carbon, so which comes from the CO2 in the atmosphere. So if a lake has what's called primary production, in other words, the equivalent to trees, photosynthesizes the CO2 and makes it particulate carbon in the water, that's taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and putting it into the water. Then what happens after a while, some of it gets consumed, of course, by phytoplankton, by zooplankton and by fish, but some of it also falls to the bottom and dies. And then in the Lake Argyle situation, you also have a lot of sediment coming in from the Ord River. I mean, the lake is slowly filling up over hundreds of years. That carbon then gets buried in the sediment, and sure, some of it breaks down by bacterial action and goes back in terms of gas and other products into the water and then finally escapes back in the atmosphere. But approximately 2% of that primary production, research has shown, stays in the sediment. So in other words, it goes from the atmosphere into the water as algae and then from algae down into the sediment and then bacteria break it down and then ultimately it ends up in the sediment. And of course, over millions of years, that's how oil and gas and coal were formed. And the lake is very big, so at the moment, I did a rough estimate for writing this proposal, and I have a student working on this problem. About 2 or 3% of West Australia's anthropogenic carbon emissions from cars and factories and power stations and so forth is actually sequestered in Lake Argyle. So I was quite surprised because the lake
2 or 3%, did you say?
Yeah, it's really big. And, you know, people might think, oh, that's nothing. But on the other hand, if you listen to the debate over the last 2 years on emissions, carbon emissions trading, and that we're talking about, I think, 5% in the next 20 years. Well, by just simply including Lake Argyle, that you already achieved that aim.
So will your job, Professor, be just to get that in hard writing, quantify what Lake Argyle's doing?
Step one is to actually, because there's very very few measurements and very few modeling, very little modeling's been done. So step one is to find out exactly how much is being sequestered and what are the exact mechanisms. Is it mainly the sediment burial or is it mainly some other properties? Or also, it's a tropical lake, so there's the very complicated circulation in the lake that's happening. So that's step one. And then step two is to see whether we can increase the net primary production without sort of rendering the lake in a sort of a unpleasant way. And obviously, if you put too much food in, too much phosphorus and nitrogen in, then it becomes green and has a problem. So the idea is to fertilize the field in exactly the way the farmer or the agriculturalist fertilizes the terrestrial field to produce maximum crop.
So we're talking about enhancing Lake Argyle's potential for carbon sequestration.
That's right. Yeah. And then you think, well, let's not do that just for the sake of it. And then you can think, well, how can I do that? Well, aquaculture, growing fish, I mean, fish eat the food but secrete some of the stuff, and also some of the food falls down. So generally, lakes that have large aquaculture in them have higher net primary production. So the stage two is to see whether by increasing the fish production, we can do both. We can feed Western Australia with most of the fish and relieve the pressure on the coastals because it's a very large lake. You can produce a lot of fish. And secondly, whether we can maybe increase my initial estimates are that we can get up to 30% of West Australian anthropogenic emissions. So, you know, that would be a win-win situation in both ways. Now, I realize that the fish production has been tried before and there was a virus problem. That's beyond my expertise, and we're going to talk to fish people and so forth.
Mm.
But that's a technical detail, I think.
Yes. What aquaculture opportunities, though, do you envisage could exist on Lake Argyle?
Well, I mean, the first thing would be simply to stock the lake with barramundi again and find out what the disease, how to overcome that disease problem. And I guess this is sort of getting way down the track now at the moment.
Yep.
I mean, I don't really want to say too many details, but the main thing is to estimate how much fish could we produce, and that we can do by comparing with other tropical lakes and see what they do. And in Indonesia, they have a lot of these large lakes with aquaculture in them.
But do you imagine barramundi would be the focus, Professor?
Well, I'm not really happy to say that at the moment.
Okay.
That would be certainly one thing, but the comparisons with other tropical lakes would be the first thing, and maybe other species would pop up.
When does research begin?
Well, I would have liked to start right away,
yeah.
But we were told we have to wait until the scheme is officially transferred some money. We have a contract, and we're negotiating a contract at the moment. Step one is to come up there and put in a what's called a lake diagnostic system. It's just a Mr. Chain in the middle of the lake with a med station and also some river loggers into the ord and so forth. And then also to capture all the data that's currently being gathered by the Water Corporation and the Department of Water. Step two is to get the models running. Step three to come up in June and do an extensive field experiment to validate some of the primary production estimates from the model. And then step four is to come up with some recommendations about what sort of fish and what sort of things could be tried. But
yeah.
The actual trial of fish or anything like that is not part of this project. Would be a future budget.
Is $40,000 enough, Professor?
Well, not really. We asked for more, and we wanted to also do a wider community survey, but, well, you know, that's just the name of the game. You apply, and then you get half of usually what you ask for. It's certainly enough for us to make a really good start with the modeling, and I have a student, Bronwyn Woodward, who's already started working on this, so we're looking forward to making pretty rapid progress.
We're looking forward to seeing what happens with it, Professor. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's Professor Jörg Imberger. He's the director of UWA Centre for Water Research, and indeed, interesting to see what opportunities might exist. He touched on it there. There used to be a barramundi farm at Argyle. It wrapped up probably 5-6 years ago. They had a lot of troubles with disease. I know streptococci absolutely wiped out thousands of fish. But at its peak, this fish farm on Argyle had 53 netted barramundi feedlots. It was harvesting 100 tonnes each year, most of the produce going down to the markets in Melbourne. So it has been done. Interesting to see what this research finds.